Don't want to scare anybody. I think that's a big speech there. It's not... Well, thank you very much, and I do sort of feel at home. I'm back in the Midwest, where I think I know many of the problems, and hopefully can help find some of the solutions, and I'm just very pleased to be here. I've been in North Dakota before, and I'm also pleased to see some of my friends and also some of my relatives. And my uncle Joe Talbot is here from Minot, and my aunt, Mrs. Stafford, and her son, Bill John. So I've had a chance to see my mother's brother and my mother's sister, and also have with me, I think, even though she's lost her voice, the Carter campaign has a southern strategy in the South, and we have our southern strategy, my wife Elizabeth in North Carolina. And my daughter Robin from Russell, Kansas. Now in Washington, D.C. She just finished school, and I just want to visit a while. I don't think you expect me to make some stiff, formal speech about peanuts or anything of that kind. I've been telling people that pineapple juice is a lot better for you anyway. It doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth, so I think... I think just very briefly... Again, not to try to sell myself to this group, but I am from Kansas, born in Kansas, reared in Kansas. I have been in the Congress 16 years, in the House 8 and in the Senate 8. I have been on the Agriculture Committee all of that time, 8 years in the House, 8 years in the Senate. I will play an active role starting January in a new role as Vice President, and one of my primary assignments will be the field of agriculture and exports. I believe that should be of some interest to farmers, and sometimes people forget, unless they come from the Midwest, we're not talking just about the farmer. We're talking about everybody in that state, in that rural state, whether he's a Firestone dealer or someone next door or the doctor or the lawyer or whatever, because we are a farm economy, and we do depend on production, and we don't see anything wrong with the farmer making a profit. And I just happen to believe that the backbone of our economy is in agriculture, and I want to be a part of that. I want to see it improve. I want to see the farmer sustained like everyone else is sustained. And therefore, I was very proud when President Ford indicated that he wanted me to be his running mate. In fact, when he called, since I was next door to Governor Connally, I accepted before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. So I want to talk to you just briefly about Mr. Carter's tax reform. It's interesting, to say the least. That's about all you can say about it. But a couple of days ago, he was interviewed, and the essence of his remarks was that if you earn more than $14,000 per family, talking about family income, you should pay higher taxes. And that would cover a great many people in this audience and a great many North Dakotans and everyone else in the Midwest and anyone else across the country. It's sort of more that same old Democrat theme of tax and spend and elect. And I must say it's been rather successful, because it's been your money and other taxpayers' money that sustained and perpetuated Democrats and often in office far too long in many, many cases. But I don't think it's going to work this year, because Carter says in one breath he wants to tax the rich. It's always, if you're in politics, you always want to go after the rich, because you always assume that you may be worth $1 million, but the guy next door is worth $2 million, so he's rich and you're not. And that's fine if you want to attack the rich in politics. They're always good targets in politics, and certainly the rich, they're not many of them, and they're more of us. But then when you define the rich as anybody with a family income or median income of between $13,000 and $14,000, many Americans are going to start saying, well, he's talking about me, and I didn't know I was rich. I'm just barely getting by. Or they're not getting by. Well, it just seems to me that Mr. Carter might explain that in his debate on Thursday. He might tell us once and for all, if he has a once and for all position. I haven't found any yet, because he changes almost as rapidly as the weather in the Midwest, and who knows what he may say tomorrow. But I wanted to touch on that specifically. And also, he said in his Associated Press interview, and you don't have to take my word for it, it's in there. He says you're going to treat all income the same. But I think perhaps many farmers and others understand what he's saying, in effect. He's going to repeal capital gains treatment for taxpayers. And so if you sell your land, you're going to pay taxes straight across the board. No tax, no capital gains treatment. If you sell your used combine or used truck or used farm machinery, you're not going to get capital gains treatment. You're going to pay more taxes. And that's what he said. Now, Senator Mondale, who I understand is a neighbor and he's a fine fellow, and you can always tell me apart from Mondale, he'll be with George Meany. And that's the big difference. But Mondale was up in Maine yesterday saying, well, now, Carter didn't mean $14,000, he meant $50,000. That's not what he said, and Mondale knows that's not what he said. And I think it's time for some straight talk from Mr. Carter and Mr. Mondale about what their tax reform plans are, if they didn't spell them out the other day. And I think it's about that time. Now, I'd be less than candid and honest if I didn't come to the Midwest with some understanding that things aren't too well on our side. I'm realistic. I ran in 1974 when everything was coming down. In fact, we had the pardon, and then we had amnesty, and then we had the embargo all of around October 1 in 74, and I told the president, please don't help me anymore. You know, and he didn't, and I made it. And I'll be talking later this morning in more detail. I know you're all standing. Don't want anybody to get up and make a long speech. But I just believe that whether you're farmers or have an interest in farm or agribusiness or businessmen or lawyers or doctors or businesswomen, let's just take a good, cold, hard look at the Carter-Mondale ticket. And we've got some problems in farm areas. Farm prices aren't good. I know that. I don't have to come out here and find that out. I can find it out in Washington, find it out in Kansas. But I don't think we want to go back to the Freeman-type years. And I remember the average price of corn is about $1.08, $1.10, $1.12. Average price of wheat, $1.24. I remember Freeman being quoted this year in the Journal of Commerce saying that when prices got too high, he sold grain. And under that administration, we were always trying to stabilize farm income. Now, when you stabilize farm income, that means you try to keep it low. That's stabilized farm income. When you try to stabilize anything, you try to put a lid on it. You don't let it operate in the free market. And I just say, insofar as embargoes are concerned, I followed, well, I didn't really follow. I was there a day after Governor Carter at the fair in Iowa. And he came to Iowa. That was his big thrust in the Midwest to tell all the farmers, vote for Carter and embargoes are ended once and for all. And he said it right out there, and the farmers applauded. They jumped up and down and said, here's our man. Then on the way out of town, some reporter said, do you really mean that? He said, no, I guess not. There would be, in certain cases, maybe some embargoes. That was just the beginning. Then you look at the Democrat platform where he says we can't have sales if they're inflationary. Then you look at the export licensing requirements under the so-called Humphrey Hawkins bill. And Mr. Carter just loves to give interviews. He hadn't had much success here lately with his interviews. But if you read this month's Reader's Digest, there's an interview of President Ford and an interview of Governor Carter. And in that interview, it's not Bob Dole talking, it's Governor Carter, I guess, unless Mondale says it was someone else. He says one of the causes of inflation were excessive, it's his word, not mine, excessive grain sales to Russia. Now, here's a man out there trying to con the American farmer and saying no more embargoes, and castigating and criticizing and condemning President Ford. And I just say that we've got a good farm program. Prices are going to go up. We don't want more quotas, more controls, more direction from government. We're working away from that. And I just think you take a hard look, not just at that, but as the spending policies, $100 and some billion in new spending programs, his policy on taxes, his coziness to organized labor, and that's what it is. Take a look at his position on Proposition 14, which may not interest you at all, not 14B, not right to work, but Proposition 14, which is on the ballot in the state of California, which would permit organizers, union organizers, to come onto your property, your farm property. Last week, Carter endorsed that proposition, and one of the Democrats heading his campaign quit. And he said either Carter doesn't know what he's talking about or he's changed his position again. And that man's name was Congressman Bernie Sisk, and you can ask him. And many states are taking a look at Proposition 14 in California. And I think we ought to take a look at it, too, in view of Mr. Carter's position. So, I'm very pleased to be here. North Dakota is an important state. Somebody asked me, why are you going to North Dakota with three electoral votes? We're going to North Dakota, and I'll be back in North Dakota because it's important. It's important to America. It's important to the Republican Party. It's important to President Ford and Bob Dole. That's why we're in North Dakota. And finally, I think I just say that I've known President Ford for 16 years. He's never said he was perfect, as some have. He's never been interviewed by some of the magazines, as some have. But he has an outstanding record in the Congress and as Vice President, as President of the United States. And as someone said a couple of weeks ago, whether President Ford wins or loses, he's going to leave the office or stay in the office as the same Jerry Ford who assumed that office 2 years ago in rather trying circumstances. The same decent, honest, open, candid president. And here's a man who graduated with honors from Michigan, the top third of his class in Yale Law School, who's done a tremendous job for America. And I think that says a lot. And I think that's an indication why North Dakota is going to support President Ford and why I hope the people here will do the same. And we need your help. And I'm told we're going to elect a Republican governor, and I'll vote for that. And I don't know anything about, I don't come here to criticize the present governor, missing link or not. I read that somewhere. I don't know. I understand we may elect a Republican senator, and I'll vote for that. I think I met the better half of that ticket, didn't I? If this is true. And I understand, of course, that Mark Andrews is going to be reelected, and I'll vote for that because I worked with Mark Andrews. Of course, I know that you control both houses of the legislature, and that's sort of a big thing in Republican circles. They only say that in four states. And to show you how the shape we're in as a party, Kansas is the only state that controls both houses of the legislature and has a Republican governor. So I just say that to indicate we've got a lot of work to do. And we want to help. We believe we need a strong two-party system in America. We believe we represent and reflect the views of most Americans. We want that opportunity for 4 years, and I thank you very much. Being a Democrat, but apparently doesn't know who his candidate is. He said this morning, I heard it, after a very impassioned plea to the party faithful, he said, "We've got to elect Jimmy Ford." That indicates two things. They're on a first-name basis, but he doesn't know his last name. Plus, I think he may have had his mind on some other article or some other area that his mind was wandering, which explains why he votes the way he does in the Senate.
Good. Well,
started off on farm policy, then, if you will, sir. Just out at the reception a few moments ago, you talked about Carter and his proposals about embargoes, and now he's had to step back. What kind of policy are we going to see from a Ford Dole administration? Are you going to keep, for example, Secretary Butts on?
I don't know about that policy level. You know, whether Secretary Butts will stay or not. You know, he wanted to leave some time ago. That'd be a decision, of course, the president would make. But I just believe generally farmers like the program. They like the thrust of the program. They like the freedom it provides. They don't like embargoes. I'm not trying to suggest that. But I think we've learned our lesson. And any other embargo in the Ford administration is going to be hard to come by.
Just yesterday, the president decided to triple the tariff on sugar beets, which is a crop in this part of the country. Do you feel that there will be any more moves along these lines to help protect the American farmer and his crop and his price?
Well, I hope so. The price of sugar beets is about $21 a ton as compared to $45 a ton a year ago. And it was a right move. I commend that move by the president. It's an indication of his concern, not only his concern, but his awareness of some of the real problems we're having in the Midwest.
Senator, the Democrats have really taken on Earl Butts as almost as an issue out here in the farm states. Do you find that Mr. Butts is helping or hurting the Republican
Party? Well, they can beat on Earl Butts, and I'll beat on George Meany, and we'll see who wins the farm vote.
Senator,
I don't think farmers want to be unionized.
Yesterday, Earl Butts campaigned against the Dole-Clark compromise on the grain inspection bill. Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree that he campaigned against the Dole-Clark
compromise.
I don't know what he did. I talked with him yesterday about the grain inspection bill. We've got, as you know, a very much of a log jam between the House and the Senate. I've been working with Senator Humphrey and Senator Clark. I want some legislation. And
The House refused to go along with the compromise yesterday.
Right, so now we're going to go at it again at 1:30. Well, they're going to go at it again at 1:30. I'll have a staff member there. I hope we can work it out. It seems to me that it'd be a tragedy to do all the work we've done and get up to a week before the time Congress adjourns and say, well, we can't get a bill.
Secretary Butts called it a weak carbon, or a thin carbon copy of the Senate bill, which he said he had opposed all the time.
Well, I don't know how thin it was, but I just say we need a strong grain inspection bill. I want a compromise. I sent word to Dick Clark yesterday. Let's work it out, Dick. And I hope there's some willingness on both sides. We've got some very important issues involved. And, of course, some of the fellows come from different parts of the country, you understand. And they may not want what I want, but we can work it out. If everybody gives a little bit, we want a bill.
Let's take one more question.
There have been some reports that the administration would be increasing price support levels for wheat and other small grains. Do you know anything about that?
No, I'm not aware of that. I know it's been discussed, but I'm not aware of any decision.
If price support levels are increased, are you concerned about rising consumer prices and a reaction from the consumer, which outnumbers the farm vote by 20-1?
I don't see that having that impact. I think the point would be if price supports or loan levels are raised too high, then you'd be taking over a lot of grain and held by the government. We're trying to avoid that, but I don't see the connection to the consumer. What the farmer wants is some protection, a hedge against low prices. He'd like to have something to go on while he's waiting for the market to respond, hopefully to increased exports.
Senator, you've made sort of passing references to this Playboy article today. What in Jimmy Carter's statements to Playboy do you really disagree with?
I didn't even know that I'd mentioned it.
Would you talk to Playboy?
Could I?
Would you?
No.
Thank you.